So we read Rus, as we've known many years in this class. We read Rus on Shavuos. Many reasons why we read Rus. One of the reasons is because Rus is famous for being a convert, and technically the Jewish nation on Sinai became converts. So because of that, convert, we read that. As well, last week in the parasha, we read about the commandment to love each fellow man, and it also has a commandment there to love a convert. I figured we will discuss a little bit about that tonight. Here it goes. So it says like this in Rambam, according to Rambam in Deis, Perek Vav, the laws of Deis, chapter 6, 3. Each man, everyone is commanded to love each and every one of Yisrael. Love your fellow man. And therefore it says how to do it. That we discussed in a class a few years ago. Exactly what that means. And then it says, right after that, loving a convert who has come to nestle under the wings of the Shekhinah fulfills two positive commandments. One, for he's also part of the regular fellow man. Since you have to love every Jew, a convert is a Jew. So therefore, when you love a convert, you fulfill the obligation of loving every Jew. As well, another one, because the convert says in the Torah, Rambam quotes a further pasuk in Deuteronomy and Devarim, even though there was one last week's parasha, and states that you shall love the convert. One of these guys asked that on bottom 38. No. You shall love the convert. Thus, Hashem has commanded us concerning the love of a convert, just as he has commanded us concerning loving himself. Very added words by the Rambam. Just like you love, Hashem told us to love the convert, like he told us to love himself, Hashem. Okay. So the first thing we have to know is there's a law to love every fellow man, and an extra additional law, which we'll discuss tonight, to love every convert. So when you love a convert, you successfully fulfill that commandment, you get two stars for the price of one, because he's also included in the Jew. Now there's a fascinating Pachad Yitzchak, written by Rav Hutna Zatzal, Grand Rabbi of Yeshiva Chaim Berlin for many, many years. And he asks like this. He says, first of all, any time that there are two laws that one exists always within the other, it doesn't get counted as a separate 613. We have discussed in this class many times. First of all, are there 613 commandments? Then we took that as a yes. Then we discussed that even though there are 613 commandments, there are many commandments that are not in the 613 as a primary commandment. They're there, but not as a primary commandment. They're within, under the umbrella of another one of the 613. And how you decide what is the 613 and why it's important to know what the 613 are, different approaches we've given over the years in this class. But how do you know what's in the 613? The Rambam writes, before he gives his list of 613, he has an introduction. He wrote, these are my 14 rules. So, for example, a commandment that only existed in the desert, don't leave over the mun, will not make the 613. In order to be 613, it has to go eternally, not a short time thing. And there are different rules he has. And then you start asking yourself, wait a second, the laws of Shabbos have 39 obligations. Are you going to count 39 of the 613 of Shabbos? The Rambam explains why certain things don't get counted multiple ways. But he does say, for example, he gives that we have an obligation that we do not give a portion of the land to anyone from the tribe of Levi. There's a separate chapter, verse that says, don't give anyone who's a Kohen. Now, obviously, every Kohen is included in a Levi. It just happens to be a separate pasuk. So Rambam says, no, you're not going to count that as two separate commandments because once you have the larger one that always includes the little one, you're not going to do it. So as another example, if you have to get to step B before, if you need step A to get to step B, he's not always necessarily going to count step A as a mitzvah. If you always have to use step A to get to step B, it's going to be included in step B. That's how it works. So the Rambam has a question. Yes.
But couldn't you technically break one or break two? Like, for example, the Cohen and Levi example?
Yes, so you will. So you will violate potential. Like the laws of idolatry are written. I'm going to make up a number 35 times in the Torah. So someone who violates idolatry might be violating 35 commandments, but they will not be listed as 35 separate commandments in the 613. So yes, there's multiple violations. Most of what we do every day are mitzvahs that are not technically master 613 mitzvahs. Yes, eating. The Gemara discusses and the Rambam discusses when a person eats certain insects. He violates the Gemara Makkos. He violates four or five different commandments based on which insect, which water insect, or land insect. But we don't count necessarily as a 613, four separate ones of eating that. That's how it goes. So the Rambam has a question. Not Rambam. The Pachad Yitzchak Rav Hutna has a question. In the laws of loving people, the Rambam yes counts. V'haftarach love your fellow man. And he yes counts, love the convert. So he says, wait a second. Since the Rambam himself says, every time you love the convert, you automatically include loving every person. So why is this counted as two separate mitzvahs? Just have love every person. Happens to me. Sometimes you'll have a convert. We'll give you extra credit in Shemayim. God will give you extra credit, just like eating the thing, eating the weird insect. You'll get four violations. But it doesn't mean you listen to this too. Why are you listening to this too? That's his first question. His second question is, what's the Rambam speech here? The Rambam said again, loving a convert who has come to nestle under the wings of the Shekhinah fulfills two positive commandments. One, as we just said, for he is also among the fellows, which it says, love your fellow man, and also for loving the convert. Now the Rambam adds on details. This is a law, this is a code of laws. Thus God has commanded us concerning the love of a convert, just as he has commanded concerning loving himself. So just like you have to love God, you have to love a convert. We need that detail. Is that important? What is that adding to us? As it says in Deuteronomy, love yourself, love the convert, the whole. The Pacha Yitzchak has two big questions. One is why in the list of 613, which is why listed twice, and more so, why is the Rambam giving you a reason? Not every law needs a reason behind it. It should have said, you have an obligation to love the convert. No, you have to love the convert because it says love Hashem. Okay, who cares? So he comes up with a fascinating answer. Fascinating answer. He says like this. The obligation to love another Jew, slash, the obligation to love a convert, has a reason behind it. It is not, here goes a bumper sticker. It is not love a person who is a Jew. It's love a person because he's a Jew. It's not love a person who is a convert. It's love a person because he's a convert. And his example that he gives is amazing. You meet your next door neighbor, and you're under the impression, and he's under the impression, that he is a not Jewish. And guess what? You get along extremely well. You both love the Yankees. You both love everything together. You have the same palate that you like siblings. And you're getting along with each other great. And this is one of your best friends. And then years later, you find out that, by the way, this guy just found out genetically he is a Jew. He never knew that. Or he never told you. Or he didn't know. It doesn't make a difference. It's all the same. He never knew he's a Jew. And now you find out he's a Jew. Did you or did you not fulfill the mitzvah? He says, no, you did not fulfill the mitzvah. Even though the law sounds like love every Jew, love every person, doesn't mean love every person who is a Jew. It's love every person because he's a Jew. And if you did not know that, and that's not why you liked him, it doesn't count. So you like him because of his good looks and his Yankee fan and his politics, that doesn't count. You have to love the person even if you don't share politics and sports activities because he's a Jew. Convert as well. The reason you love a convert is not you happen to love a guy who is a convert. No, that's not how it works. You have to love the guy because loving who has come to nestle under the wings of the Shekhinah. There's a reason behind you have that love. It's specified. So Rav Huttner, Zatzal says, very interestingly, that the Rambam, when he writes that when one law is swallowed up within another law, it doesn't get counted in two of the 613. That applies when it's swallowed up because it has similar concepts, similar reasons. But now we're saying this is not swallowed up. It's not automatic. Every time you love a convert, it's going to work out correctly because it depends why. It has different reasons behind it. It's not even, it looks the same and it smells the same and it sounds the same, but it's not the same. Love a Jew and love a convert, the crucial word is not love, which would then be maybe each one under the auspices of the other one. Maybe interconnected. It's love someone because he is a Jew. Those are crucial words, because he is a Jew. And love someone because he is a convert. Two different things. They happen to look the same, but it's not the same. You have to have two reasons why you love the convert. And sometimes you'll do one without the other. You could love the convert because of the convert, not like him because he's a Jew. You're not thinking about it. Or you could love a guy because he's a Jew or love him for a million other reasons. But you need specific reasoning behind it. And that reasoning separates the love of them. It's not love, love. It's because. That is Rav's wild idea. And with this, he answers these two questions and other things as well. It becomes a very good idea. He happens to quote that it could be everyone doesn't agree with this Rambam based on other things, but that's not for us tonight. So we have now, as an introduction, we know prior to Shavuos, all of us each year take on the Torah. On some level, we all become some type of convert. And the love we have to have for each other has to be both. We love someone because he's a Jew, not he is a Jew that we love, because he's a Jew, and because he's a convert, that becomes extremely crucial to fulfill the commandment. Okay.
Say that we're a convert. Was Jacob in the Bible considered a convert?
Even less possibly. He might not have been even been considered a Jew. There is a great debate whether the forefathers were considered Jewish or not. We did discuss this in other classes over the years because it came up, I'll tell you why in a second, but there is a debate. Were they Jews or were they righteous Gentiles? I hate to use that word on the forefathers, but on some level, yes. They did observe the mitzvahs as Jews, but there was no Torah yet. So there was no Jewish nation yet. There was no Jewish people yet. The famous question, which we have said in this class, has over 100 different approaches, is this. If a non-Jew, they could do both, almost always. Now, the 613 commandments, they're in doubt. And this happens, by the way, nowadays. You find a kid on the street. Is he a Jew or not Jew? So for a while, you're playing both sides of the game. You're hedging your bets. When someone is in the middle of converting, they're still a non-Jew, but they want to practice as being a Jew, so they hedge their bets. Let's do both. So someone's converting, we'll tell him to sit in a sukkah. Sit in a sukkah. Why? Who cares? If he sits in a sukkah, he's a Jew, he's fine. If he sits in a sukkah, well, someone converted, we know he's not Jewish yet. Take the child we don't know, or take the forefathers. Almost everything they're going to do, there is no issue of them doing it. But there's one major one, and that is Shabbos. Because a non-Jew is not allowed to keep Shabbos. Not allowed. We will stop him from keeping Shabbos. When someone's in the process of converting, we force him to violate Shabbos every single week. Cannot keep Shabbos. So the famous question became, what did the forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Yaakov, do every seventh day on Shabbos? If they decide, again, they can shake a little, but who cares? Everything they can do and say, who cares? They can refrain from eating things that a non-Jew is not allowed to eat, and a Jew is allowed to eat. Who cares? Just don't eat it. But what they can do is keep Shabbos and not keep Shabbos simultaneously. Or can they? If they keep Shabbos and they're a non-Jew, they violated a major problem. If they don't keep Shabbos and they are a Jew, they violated a major problem. So you have to find a way that you can keep Shabbos as a Jew and violate it as a non-Jew. That's what the forefathers had to do. And there are, again, well over 100 answers. I will give you a couple so you understand what I'm saying. One of the big ones. One of the big ones, we're going to do a show and tell here, is tzitzis. So when a Jew walks the streets wearing these things, is he, and there's no Erev in the neighborhood, is he considered like he's carrying? Oh, this is part of his clothing. Since we are obligated to wear this, it's attached to clothing, it becomes clothing. Guess what? Wearing clothing is not carrying on Shabbos, or else we would live in a nudist colony, which we do not. So definitely wearing these on Shabbos is 100% allowed, but maybe it's only allowed for a Jew. If a non-Jew wants to keep Shabbos, we tell him, don't keep Shabbos. We're not allowed to keep Shabbos. Okay, well, how do I break Shabbos? We can give him a lot of ideas. Light a fire. We can give a lot. You know what else we can tell him? Put on this pair of clothing. Because a non-Jew is not obligated to wear this. So why is he walking around with this? Then it's not called clothing. Then it's called carrying. So Abraham, Isaac, and Yaakov would put on a pair of tzitzis on Erev Shabbos and walk around. If, as a Jew, they kept Shabbos, as a non-Jew, they violated Shabbos. That is one of the many answers given on how did the forefathers, based on your question, how, there's all in parentheses, by the way, all parenthetically speaking, because we've gotten into a convert, now that you got into this, but how the forefathers would have kept Shabbos as a Jew and violated as a non-Jew. Again, as the second most famous answer is, a non-Jewish Shabbos starts, well, depends what, at sun up and ends at sun up on Sunday. The non-Jewish day begins in the morning. The Jewish day begins at night. So what Abraham and Yaakov and Isaac would do is very simple. They would keep a Jewish Shabbos, Friday sundown to Saturday sundown, but they would make sure, which we do anyway, they would make sure to violate Shabbos, if you can call it that, on Friday afternoon and Saturday night. So as a Jew, they kept Shabbos. And as a non-Jew, since the non-Jew Shabbos is Shabbos morning till Shabbos night, they did not keep Shabbos. Are we following two different answers on how the forefathers kept Shabbos? And since I told you there's 100 answers, you will understand that we can spend a very long time on this. Because a lot of the answers have drawbacks, and there are good answers, and there are better answers, and stuff like that. But the idea would be, again, as all in parenthetically speaking, we even put this out as a separate class since Charles loves editing for no reason.
Does Chumash ever write about the Avos actually involved with Shabbos in any which way?
The word Chumash, no. The Gemara, when it says that the forefathers kept Shabbos, the example given, it says Erev. Simplistically put, it meant he didn't carry on Shabbos. He put up an Erev.
Who's the he?
Abraham. It says Abraham kept all the mitzvahs, including Erev. Now, it might be Erev Tavshilin, there's other, but simplistic, it means the Erev of carrying.
Probably rent to Chum.
Right. But that would mean he kept Shabbos. And it does say by Jacob that when he came into the city, it says, the Rashi there says in the Chumash, give me a Chumash, Rashi there says, when he came right after the brothers killed, right after the brothers killed Shechem. So it says there that they came and encamped on the city. And Rashi there says, not open Chumash, but it's there, that Yaakov came before Shabbos to ensure Shabbos was kept. So it also implies, you have to see the exact words of Rashi and the Medrash. So we assume that they did keep Shabbos. Again, so keeping Sukkah, keeping most things are irrelevant.
And they keep clearly like Pesach, those open many instances of where they bake matzah, or there's two goats, or there's something,
Right.
get bread for the guests, have a
Correct.
house for the guests,
Correct.
Pesach.
Correct. Pesach, yes. So again, so we believe they did keep all the laws. And then we brought up in this class multiple times, well, how did Yaakov marry two sisters? The early commentators asked that, because in Jewish law, you can't marry two sisters. That's why the question is very serious. If you believe they kept all the laws. Now, there are some who held they kept all the laws as Jews, and some say they were this weird situation. In fact, this debate, whether the forefathers were Jewish or not Jewish, is a debate that goes on for centuries. In fact, according to most commentators, not most, according to many commentators, the fight between Joseph and the brothers were whether they were considered Jews or not, which laws they had to keep. If you look at what it says, what did Joseph snitch on them? First, they ate from a live animal. That's strange, right? Let's be honest. If you know, a non-Jew has a different version of laws when it comes to eating from a live animal as a Jew. So what it meant was that they consider themselves non-Jews, and they were able to eat this food. And Yosef said, no, we're Jews. As Jews, you're not allowed to eat that food. So the argument between Joseph's brothers was non-Jews and Jews. All of these things come into that effect. They married certain women. What does it say there about Joseph? It meant since they considered themselves non-Jews, they were allowed to marry certain people. Joseph, who considered them Jews, had a problem. So the debate was there. And the debate might even go back earlier. Depends on how far you go back with the commentators. It becomes a great debate. Were the forefathers Jews or were the forefathers not Jews? And either way, there was no such thing as a Jewish nation. And there was no such thing as conversion. In fact, as well, the commentators ask, when it says the daughter of Pharaoh was going down to the Nile when she found Moses and the thing, and the Talmud says she went down to convert. And all the commentators say, what do you mean you went down to convert? There was no conversion at that time. There was no such thing as a Jewish nation at that time. We didn't exist until Sinai. So, yes, Eliezer's question, what are the forefathers? Are they considered Jewish or not? It's very tough to say they're Jews. And how did the daughter of Pharaoh convert? And it says Abraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov made converts. How did they make converts? All of these things become very serious questions on when the Jewish nation began, which we agree began at Sinai. So, I don't think you want to separate this into a separate class. So we end the parentheses here, and now we get back to our discussion. We have a discussion that we started with. We have an obligation to love a Jew. We have an obligation to love a convert. We are saying love is not the crucial word. Because he is a Jew, because he is a convert, that becomes the major detail. Therefore, it's really two separate things. Why do we have to love the convert? Because he's a convert. I don't know. If I really love every Jew and he became a convert, if I'm going to treat, when we want to accept a convert in, we want to make the convert feel right at home. Don't worry, long road from conversion, from what you came from to where you are now, not so easy. We're going to take you in. You'll be one of us. In order to be one of us, you treat him as one of us, or you treat him better than one of us. Doesn't it become slightly counterintuitive to treat him better? Oh, you're one of us. I have one pillow to give out today. My regular born Jew, natural born Jewish citizen, or the convert? I'm gonna give it to the convert because you're one of us. I don't know if that, does that mean he's one of us? It sounds like you're treating him a little differently.
Yes, I was going to ask that also.
Well, you have to be
Doesn't
kind no matter
say
what.
kamocha by a gear.
Where are you looking?
What do you think?
I think in last week's parsha it does say. I think in Devarim it does not say it, but in last week's parsha it does say it. There's two psukim on it. Because it says by love your fellow man, it says love your fellow man as yourself. So he is correctly saying Bodenheim that in the Rambam in front of us, it doesn't say love him as yourself, it says love the convert. Not as yourself. There's already a difference. But that is because the Rambam is quoting this verse here, as opposed to the verse earlier, you have to know why he did that, where it does say love the ger as yourself. But it would be a good question otherwise. Anyway, why do we love the convert? There is a machlokes, an argument on what the reason is to love a convert. So the Sefer HaChinuch, we've mentioned many, many times in this class, anonymously written in the 1300s, a masterpiece of the 613 commandments in the order of the Parsha. What order do you write the 613? He did it in the order of the Torah. And within each mitzvah, he gave the basic minimum of who's obligated, men and women, men and children. When are you obligated? Are you obligated before the temple, when the temple's around, even when the temple's not around? Where are you obligated? Is it a command only in Israel, even outside of Israel? Each one of the 613, almost, you know, sometimes he misses something and that becomes a big question. He goes through the basics. And then he gives like a moral reasoning behind it, each commandment. He says, what is the reason, the moral reasoning behind love the convert? Very simple. The man made a major move in his life. He made a major move, maybe physically, to uproot himself. And now what he is lost, lonely, without protection, if you might say, like a widow or an orphan. He's no man's land. So the Torah tells you, be extra careful about this person. He might go back if he's not treated well and he's got no protection and he's being bullied and stuff like that and he's at home, no ET call home back there, no phones. What are you doing? Treat him nicely.
In the Talmud, there's a thing about orphans, that if an orphan, you have to treat
correct. Chumash, not Talmud. Chumash.
Oh, it's in the Chumash.
Yes.
You have to treat extra special.
Correct.
Nice.
And a widow.
And oh, I don't know that. And what I learned about the orphan, that if you don't treat an orphan extra special nice, Hashem will step in because that person doesn't have
that's
a parent.
That's a puzzle.
So Hashem will step
yes.
in.
Yes. Excellent. That's a puzzle. Correct.
So, you know,
so now, and by the way, and one of the psukim says orphan, widow, and convert. So the reason is the same reasoning, because the person is lonely. The Rambam doesn't say that here. The Rambam writes, loving a convert who has come to nestle under the wings of the Shekhinah. It's more respect for spirituality. Let me see if they say it on bottom here. Here the Rambam referring to a convert to Judaism? No, doesn't say it. No, I don't know. No, they don't say it here. But it means either you love him because he's lonely, he can be bullied, he's unprotected, or you love him because we value the move he made. We're born Jews. So some of the stuff might be easier depending how you're raised or not, but it's easier. You know what the difference is? What would be the difference in law? We always say the difference in law is between the difference and the reasoning behind it. One of the major differences would be, and the Sefer HaChinuch adds it on. Question, what he means? He writes the laws, love the convert. Guess what? It applies to men and women. Women have to love the convert. It applies inside of Israel, outside of Israel. Gotta love converts in America. It applies in front of the temple, outside of the temple. He's right, all these things. And then he says, and by the way, any person who moves from neighborhood A to neighborhood B has to be treated better. Makes sense? Since the Sefer HaChinuch has learned the reason behind the mitzvah is because the guy's lonely, could be bullied and all of that. A convert is a prime example, but he's not the only example. The guy who moves from state A to state B and now is a newcomer to the neighborhood might have the same obligation. And he writes it does. If you're going to learn at the Rambam, that the reason we really want to treat the convert well, because we respect the move of coming under the wings of the Shekhinah, when you move from neighborhood A to neighborhood B, no, you don't have that extra move. And therefore, you would not be obligated under this law. Again, you have to treat everyone well, but you'd not be obligated under this law to treat the guy who moved neighborhoods. There's nothing to do with that. It's not about a guy being lonely and scared and depressed. And no, it's about going under the Shekhinah. As well, we have converts, for family converts. We've discussed this the last few weeks because of the law of procreation, Puruvu. If a convert, an entire family converts, non-Jews, decide we found the light, and the whole family's in. So in law, there's a process to go through to make the adults convert. There's a circumcision if they're not circumcised, where there has to be something. You go into the mikvah and have to accept upon themselves the mitzvah. That's the crucial detail of converting. Someone under the age of 13 cannot be doing that. Because in Jewish law, when you're under 13, you don't accept anything. It doesn't mean anything. It's words. No power to do that. What do you do with a child convert when the family is converting? He has to live like a Jew. So what we do is a fake conversion, and we wait until the kid turns 13. Okay. So the family joins in. The adults are going through the real process. Biblically speaking, they're going through the process. The child is going through a quasi-process. He's going through the motions. They don't take effect. Because in the end, a two-year-old who goes... when you put a two-year-old to the mikveh, it means very little. And you put an 11-year-old, still means very little. At 13, you tell the kid, listen, now you're an adult. Make a decision. But at 13, 11, 12, you can't, under that, you can't do it. Now, the kid at 13 says, you know what? I like my parents. It's a good idea. You know, if I say no, say no to the whole situation. This is going to be a very weird dynamic going on in this house here. The parents are regular Jews. We welcome in one of us. The whole family's converted. This little kid says, I'm not going to do that. I like my cheeseburgers at 12 years old, 13 years old. So it's, it's going to happen. It might happen, but a lot of kids are going to automatically go with it. What about that child who's now an adult? Does he have a mitzvah? Do we have a mitzvah to treat him because he's a convert, treat him better? Depends what the rule is. If the reason is potentially, if the reason is because the kid's alone, he's unprotected. I don't know. How do you look at a kid with a family that converted? I'm not sure. A single guy converts, single woman converts. I'm not, that's something. A little kid who has his parents, is he different than the other guy? You have to debate. I'm not sure. It can go both ways. Does the child convert have protection? And on one hand, he has his parents. On the other hand, the whole family is outsiders. Figure that out.
Halachically, not his parents, though, right?
I'm not sure what it is. But what about the fact that he came to nestle under the wings of the Shekhinah? Do we really look at that as he came to nestle under the wings of the Shekhinah? Or he came to nestle under the wings of the house of his parents or not? Comes the question.
People convert for marriage.
Yes.
Some women convert for marriage. Some men do.
That very good. If someone converted for marriage, excellent. Didn't even think of that. Now when I watch this, oh, I gotta write some of my notes. Very good. If someone, I'm gonna write this. Wow, that's really good. If someone converted for marriage, even though we don't want that, we frown upon it, but the conversion works. So would you have the obligation to treat them better? So if you believe someone's converting and they're lost and single, I would say even for marriage, they're lost and single, but maybe not. Maybe you wouldn't look at it that way. When you look at someone converting for marriage as alone and single, I would say you say no, because they have a husband now. And what and would you look at it as nestling under the Shekhinah? Definitely not. So you're saying it would not be a difference in law. You're going, no, you're at least you're consistent. Not gonna, I thought it's a, we I thought you created a new difference. You're saying it's not a difference. Both would not be under the ruling.
I don't know.
I don't know.
It's complicated.
Right. I would say it'd be depending on the kid. Bodenheim, what'd you say on the kid? You held the kid was alone or not? He started saying we cut him off.
Halachically, if he doesn't have any parents, maybe you could say he is.
He's
Even
alone.
if
To Bodenheim, what would you say to
halachically.
Charles's case? The woman or man converting for marriage, are they alone? Yeah, then they're alone.
The question is, have you ever considered a married woman alone?
Yeah.
Although if she's a
We
Gioris,
want to
maybe
touch
she
that conversation. Oh no, are you
doesn't.
baiting me into getting fired here?
No, but a Gioris.
So every convert on some
If a
level is
Gioris
alone.
marries, if a Gioris marries somebody who is Jewish from birth,
Right.
so would she be considered alone? Or would she be considered, being that she's married,
Alone means
she's
that
not on her
they,
own?
what was the reason we said? The reason why the convert has to be treated better is because they're like the orphan and the widow, and they're like unprotected. I use the word alone also. It's unprotected, alone, whatever the words are.
Understand. If you figure like in a clan society
But
where the
even if
family's
they're not by
protecting
themselves,
themselves.
they're bullied. They're outsiders. So I'm not sure. I don't
It's
know
like
now. I don't
now she's
know, to be
attached to
honest.
somebody. She's not on her own. If she'd be a Gioris and not married, I would hear that. But if she's married and a Gioris, maybe she's not
So
considered
according to
alone.
you guys, I have to think about it. According to you guys, when she converts for marriage, until the marriage, the reason is, if you hold the Rambam, the only reason we treat converts better is because they came under the wings of, nestled under the wings of God. This person who converted before marriage does not get special treatment because they didn't convert to nestle under the wings of God. But if you say the reason why we treat converts better is because they're alone, then you would have to treat this person alone until marriage. So there would be a difference in law. Until the marriage. You found another difference. I like it. I'm saying you found another difference in law. I like that.
People that convert for their own internal reasons are different than people that convert for an external reason.
Right.
Getting married is an external reason.
Absolutely.
Internal reason, I think that's the what the Rambam is. That's why the
And
law.
therefore, the Rambam would say, okay, if it's an external reason, the law might not apply.
Correct. That includes the family that all got
And
convicted.
especially what we're saying before, you have to convert, you have to love them because they're a convert. So the Rambam's saying because they're a convert means because they nestled under the wings of God. You didn't, you're not because a convert nestled under the wings of God. You converted for an external factor. And therefore you wouldn't have to. But if you told someone's alone, lost, like someone switching neighborhoods, a regular born FFB, born religious, who moves from neighborhood A to neighborhood B, you'd also have to treat nicely because they're like the widow and the orphan. They're no different. They're alone. They're unprotected. They're lost. They feel these things. then you would have to treat her or him that way until the marriage.
But I can ask you a question here.
Yes.
Now, let's say when it comes to your parents, all right?
Yes.
All right. We're not commanded to love our parents.
Yes. Good point. Respect parents and fear.
So wait a minute. So parents, we're not required to love.
Correct.
Why should we be required to love our fellow?
Beyond excellent. Beyond excellent. In fact, I think it's in the response of the Rambam, but if I have to remind me to look it up,
One question.
it might be response of the Rambam. I don't remember now where it is. One of the early authorities, I don't remember now who it is now, writes that you want to know how valuable the love of convert is. He says what you just said, that when it comes to parents, you have to fear and respect. When it comes to a rabbi, fear and respect, but it doesn't say love. And when it comes to the convert, you have to love. And it says it in one of the early commentaries to show the value of what it means of this mitzvah. I still remember who says it now. I saw it. So I don't remember who said it.
Are parents included in Reyafa?
It's not a special command though. But yes, everyone would be
Right.
considered.
The question is, would be considered Reyafa? Maybe they're a different level
Right, but the
than
convert still is an extra one. That's what we started with. It says here that someone who loving a convert fulfills two positive commandments. One, he's also among the fellow men, and one, he's a convert. So the convert always is above and beyond everybody. So a convert is above and beyond. Yes, you have to love your parents, but you have to love the convert. It's a second command.
But you never
No,
said
you have
any
to
words about
respect
your
your
parents.
parents.
It says respect and fear, two different places. Correct.
Yeah.
And one of the early commentators says it. I got to go find it.
Rambam doesn't say about parents, you have to respect and fear and love them because you have to love all Jews.
No.
Fascinating.
Right. We will stop here. Next week, what we might do, if you like the idea, the question becomes, asked about 300 years ago. The question becomes, a person is not allowed to be a judge on a court case if his relatives are in the courtroom. They must recuse themselves. They also cannot be a judge to someone who is considered a friend and or an enemy. The word friend in Hebrew is someone they love. So the question was asked, how does anyone ever become a judge? Technically, every other Jew you're supposed to love, and there are several answers. I thank you all. Bodnam, good job. He has been very good. Very good. I gotta go find that thing that says it. When I saw it, you know what's funny? When I saw it, didn't like enter that much. Then when he said, I was like, oh, I saw that by somebody earlier. That's a good idea. I was like, oh.
What if a convert goes back to their faith or
Oh,
changes?
we have to,
Are they still?
that's a debate as well. If we remember the next time we meet, or the time after that, or the time after that, that's a great debate. Can converts? Usually, the official ruling, as we always say, is no backsies. But the question, what that means? Usually, it's no backsies.